Under City Council Meeting of Monday, April 13th, 2015.
I'd like to call tonight's April 13th regular Othello City Council meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. Would you all please rise for a short prayer and pledge of allegiance? Father God, we thank you for the opportunity to meet tonight and make decisions on behalf of this city, to hear input from this community and our business community, and I just pray that your name would be honored in tonight's proceedings. Amen. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May be seated. We'll move to item 1.3 on our agenda tonight, the roll call. All city council members are present, and that is noted. And we'll move to item 1.4, citizen input. And tonight, we have with us Erica Rattray. She would like to address the Othello City Council, if you would. You have up to 5 minutes, Erica. You can come to the microphone and, for the record, state your name and address, and you'll have 5 minutes.
I'm Erica Rattray, and my address is 201 Lake Drive, Othello, Washington, 99344. And I am calling or here because I'd like to present a change in the ordinance for a cabaret license. Right now, I'm listed, I think it's adult entertainment and cabaret, and it affects my business negatively right now because of how much I have to spend to get that. So I'm working with Wade and Sean about it. But right now, it's $50 for events, and I think it's like four something for the year. But with that and ASCAP, it's really expensive, and I think it prices us out of the market to have entertainment in Othello.
Okay, thank you, Erica. I think Wade had done some research. Wade?
We did some research, talked to the chief and to Travis, and it looks like a simple change to the ordinance will allow not just Erica's business, but also other businesses, other restaurants like that, to have entertainment. But entertainment, we're talking about, you know, a small band, a three-piece ensemble, things like that, and no dance floor. So it's like you see in other cities, when you walk in, I've got the piano player or other things like that. Right now, if we did that, if Erica did that, she'd have to pay, like you said, $450 a year or $50 per occurrence, which is not really cost-effective. And so, with working with the chief, and he can address this as well, we looked at the ordinance, and there's a couple of words, if we take out a couple of words, and we'll have this research better once we meet and talk about it in 2 weeks. But it looks like if we take out two terms, music and singing, out of the cabaret ordinance, then her regular business license would cover her having just regular music there. So, Chief, am I getting that right? I'll let you go ahead and follow up.
Council, taking those two words out would allow the businesses, as long as they don't have dancing, to have music. So if they're playing too loud, they would still be covered with the noise ordinance. So if we had complaints, we could come deal with that. We also have a dance license or dance ordinance that would cover locations that had a dance floor. So this would allow just your basic restaurants, that type of business, to actually have live music or music. I don't think this would affect our ability. Well, actually, I don't believe at all it would affect our ability to deal with problem locations.
So with council's guidance, and we'll go forward and make that change and have it ready for 2 weeks from tonight and be able to answer any questions. Then you guys have a chance to study on it. We'll send you the ordinance and that sort of thing. But any questions at this point?
Well, does the Liquor Control Board have regulations already governing serving of alcohol with live music and entertainment?
We believe they do, but Erica's researched it, I think.
Yes, they do, and I'm not sure if I'm actually part of their good vendor program, too. But, yeah, you know.
Good.
So
our ordinance goes above and beyond that regulation of the state?
It'd be the state. I have to fulfill their requirement to have a liquor license and
right.
Yours as well, because that's my issue.
So we're looking at that too, John. We'll make sure we're on solid ground. Erica, we talked today, and it's basically on her to make sure she complies with that, and we talked about it, so I think we're on solid ground.
So the open container laws and all that stuff will be followed?
Yeah.
If the venue is outside and outside entertainment, then the drinking will be done in accordance with the state regulations?
That I already have my fenced in area, so if people drink outside, they have to be in at a fenced area. And if I wanted to extend that, I'd have to call Officer Robert Solo or my liquor control gun, the officer who would enforces that, and he would allow me to like a one-time extension of that, but I still have to have a fence up, and I'm still required to keep that.
All right. Any further questions, council? Erica, thank you for bringing this to our attention, and the council will be reviewing the change to that ordinance 2 weeks from tonight. Okay? Thank you very much. Is there any other citizen input tonight regarding any issue that you would like to address the Othello City Council? If you would you please raise your hand? I'll recognize you, and you can come to the microphone and speak for 5 minutes. Okay. Hearing none, I'll move to item 2, approval of tonight's agenda. This time I'd entertain a motion to approve our agenda tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve agenda tonight. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 3, consent agenda. This time I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
Move the motion.
Motion's been made.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor of tonight's consent agenda say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 4.1, resolution to award the bid for the official newspaper. And Debbie, our city clerk, has a presentation.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The City of Othello entered into an annual agreement in 2014 with the Othello Outlook, and this expires May 1st, 2015. By RCW, we call for bids annually for the official newspaper, and this is only for legal advertisements. It does not include advertising for openings and other things that are not legal advertisements. We called and published for bids and received one bid from the Othello Outlook, and the amount is $8.15 per single column inch. They also gave us their circulation count, but we can't use that for a low bid. It's just something that was asked to get for this process. We expended approximately $5,500 in 2014 for legal advertisements. This was more than the year before, but we found that we council had approved almost 14 more ordinances in 2014 than we did in 2013. And we have to do a summary of each of those ordinances that are approved. And so that increased the amount that we expended for legal advertisements. Based upon a review of the bid process with our city attorney, we recommend that council approve the resolution to designate the Othello Outlook as the official newspaper. This will be from May 1st, 2015 to May 1st, 2016. Due that they are the only bid that was submitted, the low bid, and they meet all the RCW specifications. We have provided to you the resolution designating the Othello Outlook as the official newspaper. Is there any questions?
No. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie. Council, this time I'd entertain a motion to approve the resolution to authorize the mayor to sign naming the Othello Outlook as the official newspaper of the City of Othello.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I move to item 4.2, change order number 1 for concrete drive project. Tonight we have Terry and our city engineer, Larry Julius.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council.
Good evening.
The item in question is a change order for the concrete drive water main extension, and we have a figure Spencer will bring up. This is the extension of Concrete Drive south of State Route 26 and actually east of State Route 24 and east of Concrete Drive, where the city has installed a 12-inch water main to the approximate point right here where the Port of Othello will be eventually constructing on their property here. So it's an extension of the water main to serve the port and its potential growth west of Reynolds Road and south of SR 26. When the contractor started installing the new water main at approximately this point here, which is our stationing 8+08, it was discovered that an existing 12-inch concrete irrigation pipe owned by the owners of the farmland was within 2 feet of where the new water main was supposed to go. Typically, in a case like that, we would just then move the water main to get it out of the way of the pipe, because by requirements of Department of Health and Department of Ecology, we need to have 10 feet of separation between a potable water main and an irrigation pipe or a gravity type pipe like that. Unfortunately, because we were right next to the right-of-way owned and operated by the irrigation district for that canal, we could not move into their right-of-way. They have a requirement that we cannot put a new pipe in parallel to the right-of-way. We can cross it perpendicular, which we did a couple of times on this project with water and sewer, but we could not put pipe in parallel. So our choice was to either relocate the water main quite a bit of ways away from the location proposed or move the irrigation pipe. It's a private pipe. It's not an irrigation pipe from the irrigation district, but it's more of a, I guess I would call it a tailwater a pipe, for lack of a better term. That might not be the exact right term, but it serves the farm property here and is from this point travels east to a weir box at approximately this point here. And we knew going in, the contractor, the farmer didn't know where the pipe was. We did some estimating based off of, at this point, the pipe daylights, and you can see where it goes into a concrete-lined open ditch, and over here, where the pipe ends at the weir box. So most pipes would go in a straight line. So we showed on the drawing where the pipe approximately was if it was installed on a straight line. As it turned out, it wasn't. And the closer the contractor got to putting the pipe in, the closer that 12-inch concrete pipe was to the trench. And it started off by just showing the outside edge of the pipe, but by the time the contractor really started installing the pipe, the irrigation pipe was encroaching into the trench for the water main to the point where we couldn't install the pipe there, the water main there. In negotiating with the contractor, we came up with the price of $14,600, not including sales tax, to remove the existing pipe, replace it with approximately 600 feet of 12-inch plastic irrigation pipe, bell and spigot, so it won't leak, and then haul the old pipe off, and then backfill with native material, bringing the ground surface up to the condition it was in before the work was started. And at this point, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Quick question. Did we purchase the right-of-way to put our pipe from across that property, or were we just allowed to put our pipe?
We received an easement.
Okay.
So the property is still owned by the farmer.
Okay.
And we have a signed agreement that says we can put the pipe there.
Okay.
So the engineer's estimate was how much, and the bid, original bid, was how much?
You know, I don't know if I have that information with me. Let me check. Okay. The estimate was $158,000. and the low bid came in at about $109,000.
And so this is a $14,600 change order that was unanticipated because of the location of the pipe.
Right.
Couldn't be ascertained at the time of the engineering drawings.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, that's all I have.
Why not?
Because if we would have gone onto the property, we would have gone into where he was farming ground. We would have needed to get another easement to go onto the property. Since it was concrete pipe, we assumed that it was non-gasketed and had just concrete mud joints. So if we'd gone pothole in to find it, we probably would have broken it anyway, especially since it wasn't where we thought it was.
How deep is that lake?
Terry, do you remember?
The dam was out there?
Probably about 3.5 feet.
3.5 foot of cover over the top of the pipe. And our water main has approximately the same, 3.5 to 4 foot.
What was the original price on the change order?
They were up in the $26,000 range, but in negotiations with us, the city, and the contractor, it was brought down to the $14,600. And I'd also like to mention that Dan Quick did a very good job. He was inspecting on the job and was able, because of his notes he kept, to refute a couple things the contractor said and had kept track of the time it took the contractor to do the work. So he did a very good job out there.
Do you have a cost breakdown from the contractor that shows the $14,600 cost?
We have the negotiated amount from the contractor. We have the original breakdown that they wanted of approximately $26,000. And then via conference call, it was dropped down to the $14,600.
Okay, so you can present that to us and show what got removed?
That's the change order form itself that's attached to the agenda memo has that information. If I understand your question correctly, John.
It's attached to the agenda memo?
It's the second attachment on our...
Show me where it breaks down the $14,600.
Oh, that's a lump sum price from the contractor.
Right. Where's your presentation on what that $14,600 included from the contractor?
The verbiage in the change order item, the first paragraph, and the justification.
It's just not adequate to me. I would like to know a breakdown of how many hours involved in doing the digging.
Oh, okay.
How many feet of pipe was laid, and what you negotiated for to get the price back down to $14,600 from
$20,000. Okay. I'm sure we can get that from staff who's out there.
I'd like to see it.
Okay.
We're here today to approve the change order, and you're just throwing a number at us and telling us that you negotiated to get to that number. And what you're telling me basically is that the contractor we were working with was trying to stoop us to get more money, and you had to negotiate with him to get it down to a point.
I would say it was more, they felt that there was more work that they had done toward putting the pipe in the ground than Dan had observed when he was out there.
Well, I heard that they were looking to bill us for hours that they were not working on the project they'd been hired to work on. But yet they were already working on a project in the form of a change order. So how could they do that?
I don't know. I wasn't privy to that.
I still like to see further breakdown.
Sure, that can be provided.
Counsel, any other questions, Larry? Okay, so what do you want to do? You want to approve it tonight, or you want to wait 2 weeks?
Wait, I want to see the breakdown. I mean, you can call for a vote, and if you need it, whatever, I'd rather see a breakdown.
Well, I'm with you on that, just because from 26,000 to 16,000, just on a phone call, I'd like to see what it took, what it's going to take, you know, for these 14,600.
Sure.
I'd like to see the breakdown.
Happy to, happy to get that.
Okay. So.
Motion to table the change order until the next council meeting, until further information can be brought back to the council. That's being requested.
From staff?
From staff.
Okay.
Second.
Motion to table. Any discussion, further discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
But you're not done. 4.3, decrease change order number one, well, number nine, transmission line project.
This change order is a result of deleting a portion of the 6-inch force main fittings and appurtenances that was called Schedule B on the 16-inch water transmission main that connects well nine back to the city's water distribution system. The water main portion was called Schedule A, and the force main from the SR 17 crossing into town to a point just a few hundred feet east of 14th Avenue was called Schedule B. The change order also has field changes to both the 16-inch water transmission main and 6-inch force main due to changing the method of crossing State Route 17 that was allowed by the Department of Transportation from the original bid of jacking and boring to horizontal directional drilling. It also added 4-inch HDPE and 2-inch HDPE conduits into the same casing pipe where the force main will cross the highway for future use by the city. I believe staff felt that since the ground was going to be disturbed and the casing put in anyway, best to put a couple of extra conduits in, so in the future, if we ever need it, it'll be there. It also added an additional fire hydrant at the corner, northeast corner of Cunningham Road and Highway 17. And the actual crossing point was moved about 80 feet north of the intersection of Cunningham Road and SR 17 in order to get out of the way of numerous fiber optics and electrical and telephone buried cables. And because of that, it added a couple of extra fittings on both the force main and the 16-inch water main project. The change order increases Schedule A, the water main, by $46,932.56, not including sales tax, and decreases Schedule B, the force main, by $75,572.35, not including sales tax. And when you add both those together, it's a deductive change order in the amount of $28,639.80, not including sales tax. And with that, if there's any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Counsel?
Attachments in the agreement in Schedule A that have been signed by the contractor and agreed to by the city is $491,917 for the 12-inch or the 16-inch.
Right, not including sales tax, yeah.
Okay, and that will include the directional boring.
Yes. Yeah.
And then the full value of attachment or Schedule B for the 6-inch force main is 76,802.
Yes.
All right. And those two combined together give you that $568,720?
Yes.
And that is $28,000 less than the original bid of $597?
Yes.
And that's what's agreed to, and that's what's going to stay?
As far as I know, yes.
All right.
You don't anticipate any further changes on the project?
I don't know if there'll be any others in construction or not.
Terry, are you going to add anything in?
Not at this time.
Okay. I mean, that's going to give you the job you want done?
Yes.
Through this? Okay.
Council, any other questions, Larry? Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
So there's a change order before the council. This time I'd entertain a motion to approve this change order.
Make that motion.
Okay, motion made, second. Is there any further discussion on the change order? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to item 4.4 on our agenda is a new asset tracking policy that we're seeking to adopt, and Spencer has some direction for the council.
Yes, as stewards of public resources, we track very carefully the dollars that we spend. We also need to track very carefully, just as carefully, the items that we spend those dollars on, things like laptops and some of those small things that can easily walk off. The policy here tonight for your review is called the Small and Attractive Asset Policy, and it tracks those things that could easily go missing. iPads, computers, small pieces of power equipment down in public works. We put a limit on this of $100 because if we start tracking items that are pens, pencils, staplers, there's kind of a diminishing return on some of these things. But we as a city should be tracking the items that we're purchasing with public dollars. And this policy here tonight puts together a way that we can track these things and also review those items annually, just to make sure that we know where everything is. Sometimes things are going to move from one department to another. We can track that. And sometimes things go bad or things wear out. But at least then we know where our small and attractive assets are. So for you tonight and for your consideration is to accept this policy, establishing a process to track small and attractive assets.
So you use this in public works as well, right?
Yeah.
As you stated.
Yes.
So you pretty much do that now. I mean, because really an asset value, you know, with depreciation and everything, you get to a point where if you keep pumping money into an asset, it's no longer, you know,
worth anything.
You buy something new, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Further questions, Spencer, Council?
Do you feel that once a year is enough on this to go over it?
I think so. Yeah.
Twice a year is a lot easier to find something that may have went missing than it is a whole year gone.
It could be, and you know, that's something that we could easily change. Once every 6 months, do this review instead of an annual review. Yeah. An annual review tends to be what most cities do, and counties and hospitals, you know, local governments. But you as a governing body, that decision's yours. If you want us to do this review twice a year, that's what we can do. I think we can still accept this policy tonight with that one change.
Council, once or twice?
I think twice is probably better, but I kind of agree with.
I'm looking for a motion.
Twice a year.
Twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll move to accept this policy with twice a year change, establishing a process to track the smallest attractive assets.
Have a motion made?
Second.
And seconded. Any further discussion, council? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you very much.
Eugene. Moving on to item 4.5, annexation agreement with Columbia Basin Health Association, and Spencer, or Travis, I'm sorry, you have some information for the council tonight.
Good evening, my name is Travis Goddard. I am the Community Development Director for the City of Othello. And I'm here to do a quick presentation for the annexation for the CBHA property on 14th Avenue.
Please bear with us during our technical difficulties.
I apologize. It looks like my presentation was taken off. Can I have maybe a 2-minute break to go grab my thumb drive and bring it back?
Okay. Well, thank you. Time to grab that.
I apologize for that. So we are here to talk about Columbia Basin Health Authority annexation, or Health Association annexation. The property that you see here with the yellow with the hatched on it, proposed annexation site, it's directly south of Wahidas Elementary School, north of Highway 26. This is a picture of the aerial of the site. You can see that it's immediately south of Wahidas and across from Gemstone Avenue. The history on this site is in early October 2014, they applied for an annexation. There was a hearing on October 27th, 2014, and there were concerns raised by the then sitting city council and management, or mayor, sorry, about having C1 zoning in the close proximity to the school. And the question or the concern was, is if the site didn't develop as a medical clinic, what would happen if there was a commercial development next to the school? And as a result of that conversation, Columbia Basin, or CBHA, prepared an annexation agreement, and it should be in your packet as the first attachment to your agenda memo. And then we had a February 23rd hearing scheduled, and it was continued because there were issues that were raised at that time about access to 14th and Columbia Street. And those were associated with site development as opposed to the actual annexation. And that's kind of how we arrived here tonight, which is to consider the annexation, knowing that the next step for the development of this site would be a land use site plan, plat, and CEQA checklist that would be reviewed with the actual application for development. So at this point, we're really just talking about the annexation. Now, the reason why that's important is, if you haven't seen this map before, this is kind of the city engineer's preliminary vision for what Columbia would look like as it comes across and connects first with 7th, with 14th, and then we kind of took it the next step as what it would look like east of 7th and eventually connecting to 18th, 19th, 20th, something in that area. So you can see in on the southern end here, there's a little jog, and then it comes across. This is where it changes approaches the Columbia Basin property, goes south of them and north on that side. The reason why that's important is the alignment for Columbia is actually on the south side. It is outside of CBHA's property, and it would not be part of the city. And part of the conversations we've been having with CBHA and the Hamptons, who do own that property to the south and east, was how the city would make sure that Columbia Street got connected and that it actually got constructed as part of this project. And they are currently in negotiations with the Hamptons, and we are satisfied that they will have worked out an answer, or at least completed their conversation, when the applications come in. And we can condition the applications, the development applications, with conditions that would meet our concerns when it gets developed. So the annexation process is from RCW 351300, and it grants the city the authority to do annexations. This was a direct petition annexation request, and public notice has been completed in accordance with that standard. It's actually been completed 3 times now for each of the different meetings we've done. And an ordinance has been drafted, and it's attachment number 2 in your packet. So the next step, assuming that you want to adopt the ordinance, is the mayor and clerk will sign it. The ordinance would then be published in the paper, and it gets finalized 5 days after that. And a copy of the ordinance will be filed with Adams County, so that the county is aware that it has been annexed and it's no longer in their jurisdiction. They can make the mapping changes accordingly. And then we notify the state so that the state can make those changes accordingly also. Are there any questions about the staff report, or the agenda memo or the ordinance?
So this finalizes a long process from the city standpoint.
Yes, I'm sure.
The Hamptons and the Columbia Basin Health still have work to do. Yeah.
Okay.
Council? This time I entertain a motion to adopt the ordinance to annex the property contained in this petition request from Columbia Basin Health.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Motion been made. Yes. I'm sorry. Is there any public testimony that would like to be given? Linda, do you have any questions? No? Hearing none, I'm sorry, I apologize. Hearing none, we have a motion that's been made and seconded to approve this request for annexation from Columbia Basin Health Association. Is there any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
I made.
Mark. Okay, we'll move to item 4.8 on our agenda. Excuse me. 4.6.
4.7.
We just did the ordinance for the annexation. We approved it.
Yes.
So 4.7 is an ordinance to amend regarding impound vehicles.
Okay, so we completed our work, Travis, on this annexation?
Yes, I'm sorry. Technically, 4.5, I was supposed to ask you if you had any specific questions about the annexation agreement. I can read that or cover that with you if you'd like me to, but...
No, I think we're okay.
Just as a point of order, since they are two separate agenda items, we should have a separate motion, you know, for approval of 4.5 and a vote, and then a separate motion for approval of 4.6, which would be the ordinance itself and approval. So just so we have a clear official action on both action items.
So we took action on approving the ordinance. We need to take action on approving the annexation agreement. Okay. And is there any further information you want to give us, Travis, about the annexation agreement?
Yeah, sorry, just in case there are any specific questions about that. The annexation agreement essentially has two points. One is that the developer agrees to pursue the site being developed as a clinic, and should it not be developed as a clinic, they will pursue rezoning it to residential prior to selling it.
Okay. Remember that from earlier. Council, do you have any other further questions of Travis? Okay, so we need to adopt an annexation agreement with Columbia Basin Health Association tonight as well.
Make that motion.
I'll second it.
Motion's been made and seconded to adopt this annexation agreement with Columbia Basin Health. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, thank you, Travis. Now we'll move on to item 4.7. Police Chief Phil Schenk has some information about an ordinance regarding impounding vehicles.
Thank you, sir. What I have in front of you is an ordinance that would repeal 9.40 and enact 9.40. 9.40 in our current municipal code is our impound ordinance. It's what gives our police officers the authority to tow and impound vehicles under certain circumstances. The Washington State Patrol and RCW, or the RCW, allows police departments to hold vehicles and place a hold on them after the impound. Washington State Patrol is able to do it by a rule that they impose. We actually have to have ordinance to support the same thing. So this ordinance and the pieces around it are no greater than the Washington State Patrol's. In fact, it's from what I can tell, exactly the same. What we did was we looked at several ordinances, looked at municipal research, and some of the guidance in the cities that were doing this across the state. What this does is it requires by law the 12-hour mandatory impound for DUIs. And when our officers pull over someone for DUI, they are required by RCW to actually impound vehicle, pull it for at least 12 hours. I don't believe that was in our existing ordinance, but that is state law. The thing that this gives us that's probably the most valuable is when we have a suspended vehicle, this allows us to actually impound that vehicle for 30, 60, or 90 days. When the driver has prior offenses or prior convictions. So when the officer pulls someone over, they check on their record, they see that they've already have a conviction for driving while suspended, so we're talking multiple driving while suspended, they would actually put a hold on that vehicle and require that it be kept at the impound lot for a minimum of 30 days, 60 or 90 depending on the severity, or whether it's driving while license suspended, third, second, or first, and first being the worst. It does build into an appeal process where they can take it to the judge and ask that, you know, that, and claim that the total was improper, that we had no legal right to do so. But it, and it also builds in a one-time early release per vehicle per registered owner. So if mom didn't know her son was suspended, loaned him the car, he was arrested, we towed the car, she could come in that one time, pay a $100 fee that would go to the crime prevention fund, and she could get a vehicle out. We would flag it in the record system so that she wouldn't be able to do that again. So that would be a one-time, fairly easy appeal for us to do. So what we have in front of you, I think it would really benefit the police department, give us one more tool to help get drivers and vehicles off the road that shouldn't be there. And I'd be willing to answer any questions on it.
I guess I have a question as far, I think it looks great, not a problem with it. Do we have land to supply to keep all these cars that we, you know, hopefully there's not a bunch of them, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying, do we have a place to tow cars for 60 and 90 days?
That burden would be on the tow truck impound lot, not us.
All right.
If your car goes into impound, you pay to get it out of impound.
I realize that.
Just to, I watch cops all the
just time. To give you a simple explanation of how that would work, if they did, by RCW, if they did have, say, a 30-day impound, the impound driver or the tow driver has to notify the registered owner. So, for example, if a bank owned the vehicle, the bank's not going to be out that money because the tow truck operator has to notify the bank. The bank could come and get it. The bank is then obligated to hold the vehicle for the 30 days. But additionally, if it's a private citizen, they are obligated by RCW to actually work out an arrangement with the tow truck operator to pay for the first half, I believe within 15 days. I may be wrong on that one. But they have to pay a portion of the impound just to make sure that they're going to make good on it. If they don't, the impound lot can actually start the process of selling the vehicle. I will be working for up an agreement with our local tow truck driver. If there's multiple, we would take it up to bid, but I believe there's only one. And with that, we would be working up an agreement that if we did this and the judge said or awarded them you know, that we had done wrong, that we're not actually going to have to pay 30 days worth of impound for a vehicle that we towed. But that's. I'm not too worried about that at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Any other questions? Kelly, did you have a statement?
I do have one. Just looking at the ordinance, the actual formal ordinance, and I'd reviewed this with the chief, and it looks good. But the actual ordinance adopting it, if the council considers passing this tonight, I would recommend passing it with just one modification. I don't think it would have to be brought back before council. I don't think that would be the case, but I believe we should have the section one, the repeal section that is actually currently section four of the ordinance, should be moved to section one. I say the Philadelphia Municipal Code chapter 9.40 as it currently exists, entitled, you know, vehicle impounds after certain arrests and citations, is repealed in its entirety, and then move on to section two, which states that the new code is being created. Then it'll be clear. I mean, I know it's a lawyer technicality, but it will make it very clear to anybody reading this, and it would prevent any argument by a creative attorney that no OMC 9.40 exists.
I see. So we do need to repeal and
repeal and replace.
And replace in one motion or two?
No, you can do it in one motion. And this ordinance is fine. It has everything in it that you need. But I would put the repeal up front, and I would change the language a little bit just to make that crystal clear.
Okay.
That's my only recommendation.
Thank you, Kelly. Council? You guys like this ordinance?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Then I'd entertain a motion as outlined by council.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Motion's been made and second. Is there further discussion?
That's made with the changes that Kelly brought up.
Yes.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item five, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business to come before our council tonight? Item six, new business. Is there any new business council would like staff to research and bring ready for our next council meeting?
I wouldn't mind where we're at on the skate park by next council meeting.
Skate park update?
Yeah.
Okay.
Skate park update on the next one, just where we're at and what's going on.
Okay. We'll do that. I have a couple of announcements. First of all, I was echoing Ken Johnson from earlier tonight. There's a fire department planning meeting tomorrow, Tuesday at 6 p.m. at City Hall. And that committee is Mark Snyder, Eugene Bain, and Ken.
Yeah, that's the City Fire Station.
Excuse me, City Fire Station. This Thursday night is a planning commission meeting at 6 p.m. here at the City Council Chambers. John will be present, myself, and anyone. Is there any else that are interested? We just need to make sure we don't have a quorum. This Friday at 9:30 a.m. at O'Reilly's, there's going to be a ribbon cutting. Chamber of Commerce and City will be there to give short presentations. Everyone's welcome to attend the new O'Reilly Auto Parts ribbon cutting. Next Friday, the 24th, is the last Friday lunch. This is where different groups among the city, volunteer, and government and otherwise get together and they discuss all the things that they're involved in and are doing in the city. As some of you are aware, the mayor of McFarland, California, came to City Hall a couple of weeks ago. He gave us a signed poster that was from the movie McFarland USA. The mayor of McFarland is an Othello High School graduate. A number of those cross-country runners in that movie that's out in theaters right now attended school here in Othello. And so there was some discussion about potentially naming McFarland, California, as a sister city to the city of Othello. And I was doing some research, and the city of Othello, actually I had Jennifer do some research for me. I didn't have time to do it all. The city currently does have a sister city, which is Wolensee in Ghana. And Wolensee, we have sent representatives to Wolensee. I think there was a problem with them and when they got to Chicago trying to get here, but we do have some information in a that they had presented to the city of Othello. It's a really formalized treaty that was done, and today Kwasi O.C. Bonsu, he doesn't make nearly as frequent trips. It was by and large through Pastor Bob Loon, and this Kwasi O.C. Bonsu, who they were the main integral parts of this. And now, as what I'm seeing and looking into the sister city concept, it's an original idea for individual sister cities, countries, and states and counties across the United States to link up with the citizens of other countries in an effort to bring about citizen diplomacy. It's a form of legal and social agreement. It's a cultural exchange, or a school and arts and cultural exchange, humanitarian assistance, youth and educational programs. And I guess the thing that I felt like is that I don't know if really it's in the city's best interest to enter into such a formal arrangement as a sister city, in the sense that I spoke with Roger Reed when he was
here and the legal counsel that when Kelly was in the middle of the trial, and I asked him about the city of Spokane, and they have like four or five sister cities. And as he explained to me, they're mostly ceremonial. They usually are people involved at a particular moment in time, and after those people are gone, it just ends up being relegated to a you know, a display case in the city hall. And so, not wanting to lose the momentum, because they are going to be having an event here in Othello on the second and third of or third and fourth of May, I'm wondering if maybe the council would entertain the idea of having a proclamation of the mayor giving a proclamation affirming our support of and recognition of the roots that that McFarland USA has with Othello. And rather than it being some obligation for future councils, it would be continued on as long as this city government and any subsequent to come in and take elected office would want to continue it. And it would be the same with McFarland. They would probably issue some form of a proclamation pledging their support of our city and assisting us with things that socioeconomic, government and cultural and humanitarian issues that we could interact with and learn from each other and help each other grow, because they have some of the same similar visions that we do. So I guess that's a long way to say that the city, I'm just looking for a sense from the council. I realize as the mayor I have the authority to do this without your approval, but I don't really want to do that without some kind of discussion and maybe some thoughts from the council, because I don't want to do this alone. And I think that because of their close roots here to Othello, because they're a community very similar in demographic and how they have evolved in irrigation and agriculture and a large Hispanic population, if you've watched that movie, you would see that many of the similarities exist, and they are related to a very large number of citizens of Othello, these people. So with that, do you guys have any thoughts? With regard to sister cities versus just a proclamation, that's...
I like the proclamation idea.
That's a great idea, project.
A lot better.
I don't have any problem with either of them. Because my understanding of the sister city agreement is kind of what you described as when the proclamation, so.
Thank you. The one thing Debbie did point out to me, though, is sister cities. The council would be have somewhat of an obligation to appropriate a budget, to send people down there, and to do those things. I don't know that I want. I don't know that I want to kind of to formalize anything at that level yet. I think I would rather start with a proclamation, offer them a key to the city of Othello. I'm sure there would be some kind of reciprocal key to the city of McFarland, California, and let's see where this relationship takes us before we decide to even go more formalized. So. You guys have a consensus?
Sure.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to item 7.1, executive session, real estate. The city council is going to discuss potential real estate. So I just need to have legal counsel and Wade to remain. And if staff would prepare the room. I anticipate it'll take 15 to 20, let's say 20 minutes.
That's the original.
Oh, and I would like
the original words,
Travis to stay too, I'm sorry.
Okay.
will come back out of executive session at 8:35 p.m. Council will also receive Planning Commission approval minutes, and having no further items to come before the City Council, I'll adjourn the meeting at 8:35 p.m.